Have you may have been able to guess, this morning we're going to be looking at Psalm 23. I didn't decide to change my lesson to that because of that song. Mike had planned that. So good to be with all of you this morning. And just a couple updates really quick. I know that Gwen is going to want this announced, but she's going to have to be moving to Tennessee. They were unable to find affordable housing in the area, and so we're going to be sorrowful to lose her. And Sean has also obviously moved to Arizona. So we grieve about those things, and we're saddened by that. But Gwen is going to need help, obviously, financially and everything, with the process of getting a rental truck and the moving process and everything of that nature. So just keep that in mind as you talk to her and have interactions with her. Have you ever thought in the Bible about all of the people that are righteous who were also shepherds? In fact, the first person in the Bible who we would regard as righteous was Abel. And Abel was a keeper of the sheep. He was a shepherd. And then you move a few chapters after that, and you've got Abraham, and he had flocks, and he had herds, and he was also a shepherd. And then you move further into the Bible, and Moses was a shepherd for 40 years of literal sheep, and then he became a shepherd of the nation of Israel. And King David kind of followed that same sort of process, where he was a shepherd of literal sheep, and then God took him out of that kind of pasture, and then he made him the king of the nation of Israel, and was the shepherd of the nation in that way. There's obviously unrighteous people in the Bible who were also shepherds, but you think about the righteous people who were shepherds, all of them ultimately are foreshadowings of the perfect shepherd, and that's Jesus. And as we look at Psalm 23, we've been looking at this once a month this year. This has been our theme this year. My hope is that as we've looked at Psalm 23, it's helped us grow in our confidence. Because as we look at Psalm 23, we're getting a greater understanding of who the Lord is. There's a lot of different ways that you can picture God in the Bible. You can picture him as the Almighty Creator. You can picture him as the one that sees everything that happens in our life. You can picture him in a lot of different ways. But there's perhaps no more comprehensive picture of God than the idea that he's the shepherd. It says something about his power. It says something about his love. It says something about the way that he is our guide. It's a very comprehensive picture. So my hope and prayer is that as we look at this psalm, as we've been breaking it down this year, we've been growing in our confidence because we've been growing in our understanding of God. This morning, we're going to be looking at this part that says, that talks about the valley of the shadow of death, or the King James very eloquently says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." You think about different emotions that can define people. There's some people that could be defined by being a very excited person. There's some people that could be very bubbly. There's some people that could just always live in fear. Are you that person? Do you know people like that? David says in Psalm 23, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." Fear was not something that characterized David. And as I think about the life of David and I think about what he says here in Psalm 23, if I was to live David's life, I don't know that I could have honestly wrote those words. There's all kinds of things that I would have been terrified by if I lived the life of David. But he could still say, "I can walk through this valley without fear." Let's go ahead and read Psalm 23 and see specifically what he means by that statement in verse 4. So let's read all of Psalm 23. A Psalm of David. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." I just believe that every time we read that psalm, there's something very soothing and comforting about it. Again, that psalm has been read at so many deathbeds. That psalm has been read in so many times where people are suffering and going through difficulties. But what do you think David means when he talks about the valley of the shadow of death? In the Hebrew, that whole phrase, the valley of the shadow of death, is one compound word. And the compound word in Hebrew is something like selmawet, and it's made up of two words. The first one is sel, which means shadow. So we got that one down. The second word is something like mawet or something, and that means death. So something like death's shadow. And then this gets translated into the valley of the shadow of death. So you can see where we get that translation from those two words as they're coupled together. But try to think about what that would mean. What does David mean when he talks about the valley of the shadow of death or death's shadow? I think one obvious application to this would be that he's talking about physical death. That would probably be the greatest extension of what he's talking about in this psalm. And we're going to come back to that towards the end of the lesson. But that would be one meaning to this, is he's ultimately talking about death. Here's the second meaning, though. David, I think, more specifically in this psalm, is dealing with life's deepest and darkest moments. In fact, when David writes this psalm, we don't get any kind of picture or any kind of clue that David is about to die when he writes this. This is perhaps why the New Revised Standard Version would translate the same part as the valley of deepest darkness. It's almost like the shadow of death is a hyperbolic way of saying that this is a very dark time in my life. Have you ever looked at part of your past and gone, that was like living through death? That's kind of, I think, what David is talking about here. The deepest, darkest valleys that we experience. Now try to think. David is still using shepherd imagery as we look at this psalm. Remember that this whole psalm is picturing kind of these sheep out in the field, and they're grazing and they're eating. You look at the first three verses, though, everything that we've looked at up to this point, and you see that the sheep are lying down in green pastures, they're beside still waters, they're being nourished, and they're being taken care of. But beginning in verse 4, through the rest of the psalm, the sheep start to take a journey. You almost picture them as being out in the fields, and they've been grazing and they've been eating, and they've kind of used up that territory. And now they have to start trekking up to the tablelands. You see that, by the way, in verse 5. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. They go up to this higher elevation where there would have been more grass that they could have eaten and all of that. But in order to get there, they have to travel through these valleys. Psalm 23 is picturing for us this journey that the sheep are taking. Now, I've heard this before, and I couldn't verify this with any other sources, but you can at least imagine it, even if it's not completely true. I've heard before that in Israel, there's actually a valley called Death's Valley, or Death Valley. We have one of those in, is it Nevada? Is that where that is? All right, yeah, whatever. So we've got one here, but apparently there's one called that by the same name in Israel. And so, and this valley apparently is so deep, And the mountains on either side are so high that you can only see the sun at about noon. And then for the rest of the day, it's dark, it's chilly, it's scary, it's frightening. Notice that David says, in that kind of context, I can go through a valley like that and fear no evil. Try to think about some of the evil that David might have been able to fear, or try to think about that with literal sheep. That word for evil, that word has a wide range of meaning. Sometimes we associate the word evil with like an immoral activity, but the word evil can just more broadly mean some kind of like unfortunate event that somebody went through, something very challenging. Imagine that you're a flock of sheep and you're actually traveling through a very deep, deep valley. What would be some of the kinds of things that sheep could be scared of? What if it rained suddenly? A steep, deep kind of valley can easily get flooded. What about the sharp rocks? It would be really easy to trip over one smaller rock and then land on a sharper one. What about rock slides? What about bandits? You know the story of the Good Samaritan? Remember when he gets beat up and he was on his way from one place to another? I've heard before that the route that the Good Samaritan was taking was through a valley where a lot of bandits and robbers and thieves would be. And so it would make sense that they would have been able to hide there and then beat this guy up. And so the sheep would have been perhaps worried about bandits and robbers and thieves and muggers. What about thirst? You got to get the picture in your mind. There's all kinds of things that you could fear if you were in a valley. And then David says, because the Lord's my shepherd, I don't have to fear. Now you just, okay, so if what the valley represents are deep, dark moments in our life, look what David says in Psalm 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, doesn't say the unrighteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. It's kind of a similar idea that we see here in Psalm 23. You might be a righteous person here this morning. You might be right with the Lord. You might be right with other people insofar as you can do that. And it's possible that difficult things could still come into your life. Sometimes we think that if something's difficult is coming into our life, it's because we're not following the Good Shepherd. And in this case, the sheep are walking through this valley where there's all kinds of dangers, and it's precisely because they're following the Good Shepherd. Following the Lord might be sometimes the reason that some difficulties come into your life. Family members start to reject you because you're serving the Lord. You can come up with all kinds of examples of that. But this is broadly what the valley represents, is deep, dark moments in our life. Now, try to think more specifically then. What are some of the specific valleys that we might find ourselves traveling through? We're going to look at a few different valleys that we can go through, but part of the ones that I've chosen to look at, this is not going to be exhaustive by any means, but I'm trying to think about some of the things we've also covered in the prior lessons of this series. And so try to think with me, though, about some of these different valleys that we can go through. The first valley is the valley of grief. Go over to Psalm 84. I'm trying to stay within the book of Psalms or within the life of David as we look at some of these valleys. So go over to Psalm 84. The overall picture of Psalm 84, it's written by the sons of Korah. And the whole psalm is about a deep, passionate love for the presence of God. And if you look at Psalm 84, verses 5 through 7, it's going to show the sons of Korah making their pilgrimage to God's presence. So look at Psalm 84, verses 5 through 7. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, in whose heart are the highways to Zion. As they go through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The early rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. Three times a year, the Jewish men, at least, were commanded to go to the temple or the tabernacle, wherever it would have been at different time periods, and go and worship God. And you've got here the sons of Korah talking about how on their journey, they have to go through this place called the Valley of Baca. You're going to look at a map, you're not necessarily going to find this location. It was either a literal location or they're being metaphorical here, but the word Baca rhymes with and is familiar or similar to the word weeping. Here's the picture. We have to travel through this arid, dry area. The Valley of Weeping is what it would be called. In order for us to eventually get to the presence of God. Now, I think what the sons of Korah are doing in this psalm, and there's a lot about this section here that I don't understand. But I think what the sons of Korah are saying here is that as we travel and as we journey, like Psalm 23 is talking about, by the way, Psalm 23 ends with being in the presence of God. That's where Psalm 84 is going as well. On this journey to get to God's presence, we're going to have some really hard times. But what does God do with the hard times? We go through this dry, arid area, and what does it become in verse 6? It becomes a place where there's rain and there's pools of water. It's almost like the very tears that these travelers are crying out become the very tears that water the area. But just try to think for a moment. What are some things that make you weep? What are some things that have made you weep in this last year? Maybe health problems. I've mentioned this before, but growing up, I never needed to wear glasses. And when I had to get glasses in Tennessee, the eye doctor said that I have labial degeneration in my eyes. And I don't know what that's going to mean for my future, but I don't like that idea. Maybe you recently have been having some health issues and you're starting to wonder, well, what's the diagnosis going to be? And it brings you to this place of maybe not external weeping, but you're weeping on the inside and you don't know what to do. Maybe the reason that you're weeping is because of financial problems. Money is a tool that God has blessed us with to help us sustain our life in this physical world that we live in. And sometimes when it's severely lacking, it creates all kinds of problems in our life. And so maybe the problem that causes you to weep could be financial issues. Maybe it could be the loss of a loved one. I read recently about a woman whose husband passed away. And when she was at the deathbed, somebody was talking to her, and she was quoted as saying this: "I never realized the 23rd Psalm was about me. I'm the one walking through the valley of the shadow of death." You think it's talking about the person that's dying. And this woman said, well, it was actually also talking about me. Loss of a loved one can be very challenging. Maybe it's failure. Not failure in the sense that you've sinned, but maybe you've been trying to get into that college and it didn't work out. Maybe you're trying to get that job and it didn't work out. And it's embarrassing and it's frustrating and it's all kinds of weeping that it brings into your life. And that can be a valley of grief that we go through. You notice, though, in Psalm 84 in verse 6, that these travelers go from strength to strength. What does it mean that they go from strength to strength? It means that when they started the journey, they were at a place where spiritually they were doing okay. They had strength to get through the journey. And something difficult happened, and when they got through the difficulty, they were made even stronger. And the tears that they were weeping actually changed the topography of the area, and it made it so it could start to flourish and not be so arid. God can take the things that we grieve about and take the tears that we cry and make those become the tears that bring forth the grass of the field. That's one of the kind of valleys that we can go through, is grief. Now, that's a broad kind of idea. But let's narrow this down a little bit more and look at another valley that we can go through, and that's the valley of battles that we can experience. You think about King David specifically. Do you remember when he fought Goliath? Do you remember where he was when he fought him? 1 Samuel 17, verses 1 and 2. "And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, and a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." Have you ever noticed before that when, like what this scene would have looked like when David fights Goliath? You've got the valley that separates the two armies, by the way, wouldn't have been like a V sort of valley. It would have been more like a bowl shaped. It's more of a plain in between the two mountains. So you've got the Philistines on one hill, and then you've got the nation of Israel on the other. And then you've got this champion named Goliath. And depending on your translation, he's up to 9 feet, 9 inches tall from the city of Gath. And this guy's breaking forth for 40 days, tempting the nation of Israel, saying, "Fight me, fight me. If you guys lose, then you all have to serve me," and vice versa. Now, all the Israelites were completely terrified at the prospect of this battle. Do you remember when David came on the scene, though? He said in the same chapter in verse 32, "And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." We're going to come back to some of what happens in this chapter towards the end of this lesson. But when everybody else was afraid of this valley of death, because look at this giant guy that's in there. David was the one that said, "I'm not afraid." Does that sound like Psalm 23? By the way, I wonder if David wrote Psalm 23 after this moment. Can you imagine David as he was going up to fight Goliath? And he could have been saying to himself, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Well, what did he know about that battle, that God was with him? Now, try to think about some of the battles that you experience in your life. And let's just, for now, apply this to the battles of sin that you have. This is a common way that people will look at the story of Goliath. Do you ever feel like you've got like a giant ape-size temptation in your life? Or Goliath-size temptation in your life? Maybe you keep misusing your tongue. You keep saying things that you ought not say. And in order to fight that battle, it seems so insurmountable. Maybe you're continually looking at pornography. Maybe you keep struggling with anger or bitterness. And you harbor all kinds of ill thoughts towards other people because of the things that they've said about you and done to you. Does it ever get discouraging to come to church and then to hear that you need to change those things? Because it seems like it's so big and you can't do it. Does that seem like a valley to you? And then for David here, in this case, because he knew that the Lord was with him, it wasn't him in his own strength that did it. It was the Lord that was helping him face that battle. Now you think about the battles that you have against sin. Do they ever feel like valleys? Here's the third valley, is loneliness. Look at Psalm 142, verses 1 through 4. In the book of Psalms, you have David writing at least half of them. But as you look at the totality of the book of Psalms, you actually see people experiencing every human emotion that you can experience. And you learn from the book of Psalms how you deal with different situations in your life, how you talk to God about those things. Probably the most classic psalm on loneliness is Psalm 142. So look at Psalm 142. We're going to read verses 1 through 4, but I'm also going to read the title because I think that those are inspired also. So Psalm 142. A maskil of David when he was in the cave, a prayer. With my voice I cry out to the Lord. With my voice I plead for mercy to the Lord. I pour out my complaint before him. I tell my trouble before him. When my spirit faints within me, you know my way. In the path where I walk, they have hidden a trap for me. Look to the right and see, there is none who takes notice of me. No refuge remains to me. No one cares for my soul. Did you notice from the title of this psalm when David wrote this? It says when he was in the cave. Well, what cave was he in? After King Saul had tried to chuck enough spears at David, and David finally realized, I need to flee from this guy, he goes to this cave called the Cave of Adullam, and it's this place that he hides in. And you notice in Psalm 142, verse 4, he says that there's none who takes notice of me, and no one cares about me. This is interesting, because if you look at the historical context of when he actually fled to the cave, look what 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2 say. It says, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter of soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Here's one of the debates about Psalm 142. When David says, nobody takes notice of me, did he write that before the people came or was it after the people came? Because you see at the beginning of this verse, David departed, and when his brothers in his father's house heard it, they went to him. So did he write Psalm 142 before the people came? And in that case, if that's right, then David could be saying, I'm physically alone right now. Have you ever felt before that there was nobody physically that you could get together with for coffee or for lunch or something? There's nobody that you felt like you could go talk to about what was going on in your life. Maybe that's what David is going through. But is it possible that David still wrote Psalm 142 after the people arrived? Could you be part of a group of 400 people and still feel alone? Could you go to the grocery store every day where there's people all over the place? Could you try to go out and about and go shopping and be around people, but still feel alone. I wonder if David wrote Psalm 42 even after the people came, because look what he says again in verse 4. At the end of the verse, he says, "No one cares for my soul." Do you know what it means really to feel like you're lonely? To feel like you're lonely means that you don't think anybody really cares about you. And they're not taking notice of anything that you're going through. We have a church here of about 150 people or something. Could you be part of a church of 150 people and still feel lonely? Still come here every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, still come here every Wednesday night, and still feel like nobody cares about you? I'm going to suggest that that could be one of the hardest valleys that we go through. That whether there were people that were present with David or he felt emotionally distant from everybody, when nobody ever seeks to understand what we're going through, can be very challenging. Now, those are just some examples of some of the valleys that we can travel through. But if we were to wrap all of this up, what is it that Psalm 23 says? And what is it that the life of David says about the promises that valleys give? Now, I would suggest that the first promise or the first thing that we have to remember when we're going through a valley is this: that valleys prepare us. It's oftentimes given the application that when we go through suffering, it makes our character better. And we're familiar with that. That's not what I mean by valleys preparing us. Valleys prepare you to serve other people in ways that you couldn't have before. Now, try to think about how that works. Think about the life of David. Think back to the time before he kills Goliath. When King Saul is hesitant to let David go kill Goliath, here's what David says that persuades Saul. In 1 Samuel 17:36, David said this: "Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." What do you think it was like those first couple times that David encountered a bear or a lion as he's taking care of his sheep? Like, do you think the first time he ever saw him was like, "Oh, I'll take care of that thing. Woo, woo, boom," and he's dead? I doubt it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I would have to imagine that the first couple times he saw a lion or a bear, he was maybe a little frightened about that. And then he started thinking about the Lord and how the Lord will be with him, and he struck those things down in the ways that he did. But those prior valleys, what did they do for David? Those prior battles that he went through, they prepared him to be the one that could actually topple down Goliath. Think about the life of Joseph. The same principle. Joseph's brothers are jealous of him. They sell him to Egypt. He goes through so many years of so much suffering. And then when he's able to bring all of his brothers back to Egypt and their father finally dies, the brothers are wondering, is Joseph going to have us killed? And he says this famously in Genesis 50 verse 20, "As for you, you meant it evil against me, but God meant it for good." And this is oftentimes where we stop when we quote this verse. But the rest of it says, "To bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." Think about all the suffering that Joseph went through. Think about the valleys that Joseph went through. God meant it for good. You guys meant it for evil. But what has all this evil done in my life? To bring about that many people should be kept alive. Think about your life. All of us in this room have been scarred. All of us in this room have had people do things and say things to us that are unspeakable and terrible. And is it possible that because of your valleys, there are only some hands that you can hold? And there are only some people that you can encourage, because you've been uniquely qualified by all the things you've been through to be the person that can go help that other person. There's an Arab proverb. I know that it's not scripture, but I like this proverb. It says, "All sunshine and no rain make a desert." All sunshine and no rain make a desert. You know where deserts grow? If they grow, do they grow? I don't know, whatever. Do you know where deserts are formed? Where it's all sunshine and rain doesn't happen very often. Sometimes the suffering in our life changes so much of what we can do. That's the first promise to remember when we're in a valley. Here's the second one: the promise of God's presence. The reason that David can say in Psalm 23 that "I will fear no evil" is because he says, "You are with me." In the deepest, most trying moments of life, God is not going to just take you out of them. He says, I'm going to be with you. Have you ever looked at promises in the Bible of God's presence and gone, well, it seems too, like, out there for me to really know what it means that God is with me. Like, what does that really mean practically? Isaiah 43 verse 2 says this, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. I think this is a great definition of what it means practically that the presence of the Lord is with you. You can go through all kinds of challenging things, but it's not ultimately going to overwhelm you. You can pass through the waters, but it's not going to drown you. You can go through the fire like Daniel, in the book of Daniel, and it's not going to burn you up. You're going to go through some hard things, but it won't destroy you. Did you notice that in Psalm 23, there's a shift in pronouns? In the first three verses of Psalm 23, David is talking about God. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul, all of those kinds of things. In the first three verses, David is talking about God. Do you notice the shift in verse 4? Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. What's the shift? David has moved from talking about God. Now he's talking in the rest of this psalm to God. If you read memoirs from shepherds who have studied Psalm 23 and then write about some of those things, what they'll say is this. They'll say that when the shepherd has to take the sheep through the valleys to get to the tablelands, that brings about a new kind of intimacy between the shepherd and the sheep, because the sheep are totally reliant, especially in the valleys. When you go through hardships, it drives you closer and closer to God and a realization that he's with you. You think about Harry Potter. That's a clear transition into Harry Potter, isn't it? In the last Harry Potter book/movie, when Harry Potter has to go to the Forbidden Forest, and he has to face Lord Voldemort. What is it that gives him comfort in the Forbidden Forest? The presence of his family. And when he sees his family and he's able to have that conversation with the family, he's able to face Lord Voldemort to the point of death. Now, think about how much greater the Lord is. This is the Lord who in Isaiah 6, the seraphim have to cover their faces. The Lord is the one that all the kings of the earth and everybody else will have to bow down to one day. This is the Lord who spoke the world into existence. And Psalm 23 says this, if the Lord is your shepherd, he is the one that's with you, that Lord. What do we have to fear? Here's the last promise of the valley. That shadows promise light. You notice even in the wording of Psalm 23, There's a lot of optimism in verse 4. Because he still says, yea, though I walk through the valley. What is he saying? I'm going to get through it. I'm walking through the valley, and the only reason that a shadow can exist is because there's light that's casting the shadow. I'm going to get through it, because what this valley is it's a shadow. It's fleeting. It's passing. You've heard this phrase before. This too shall pass. Think about the suffering you're going through right now. If it's health related, if it's finance related, if you're grieving because you're lonely, whatever it could be, you're going to get through it if the Lord's your shepherd. Now you might be wondering, well, what about death? Whenever I ask Pam Gibson what's up, she goes, death and taxes. And here's an amendment to that phrase. Why is this called the valley of the shadow of death? Do you know what Jesus has caused death to become? It's only a shadow now. I read a story recently about a preacher whose wife passed away. And as they were driving back from the funeral, the father was trying to think of something that he could say to his children to comfort the children. And as he was thinking about that, a giant van drove past the car that he was driving in. And everything clicked with him, and he said to his kids, children, would you rather be run over by a truck or by its shadow? And the kid said, well, obviously it would have to be the shadow, because if we got run over by the truck, we'd be killed. And so the father said, well, what did he say? He said, well, of course, Dad, we'd rather be run over by the shadow. That can't hurt us. I already said that part. But then here's what he said. He said, the only thing that's run Mom over is the shadow of death. She hasn't been run over by the truck. She's been run over by the shadow. Because of Jesus' resurrection and because of the promises that we have of having our own resurrection, even death will pass. There will come a day where we can say about death, this too shall pass, because it has. All of these promises only apply to people who have the Lord as their shepherd. And that's a choice that all of us have to make. Now try to think about that in your life. Is the Lord really your shepherd? Whether you're righteous, whether you're unrighteous, every single one of us in this room is going to walk through valleys. Some of us are going to do it all alone because the good shepherd will not be with us because we haven't made him our shepherd. My hope and my prayer this morning is that we would make him our shepherd and that we would have him be the one that we follow, so that every suffering thing that we go through in this life, we can ultimately say this too shall pass because God has made even death a shadow. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, this is an opportunity to get the prayers of the congregation, to get the help of the congregation. We're about to sing a song, and if you have any needs, please come forward while we stand and while we sing it.